A note to our listeners, this episode contains discussion of suicidal ideation. Something that is important to know about mental health, about mental illness, about the whole swirling swamp that our minds sometimes are, is that as long as we're alive, it's all happening in the present tense. It's a now thing. I mean, sure, you can talk about what has happened in the past. In fact, you should. It's important to know what has happened to you, the environment you were raised in, the influence of the people around you, the traumas and triumphs and big events that formed who you were. But here's the thing. I think sometimes a person's mental health story is misunderstood as something that has happened to them before, and now they're fine, now they're unaffected. But it isn't really like that. It's like William Faulkner said, the past is not dead, it's not even past. If you had trauma, that's still with you, having shaped you and still shaping you. The body keeps the score, as they say. If you've dealt with, say, a major depressive disorder, then you're still probably managing that condition in the present moment. Even if you feel great, it's still something to contend with. Mental health is present tense. You're not over it. You're perhaps going through it. Let's watch our prepositions. Prepositions are important. Similarly, talking about the future is great. What your mind will be like, what your approach to yourself will be, what you want it to be, what you're going to need to address, that is fantastic. But the future isn't lived yet. You're speculating, predicting, sometimes guessing from right here in the present, based on who you are now. Mental health, like I said, is a present tense proposition. That's why I don't say this was depression mode or it will be depression mode. It is. It's depression mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here.
My mama say me cry, she wipe my eyes. Thing she will say is my mind. My auntie lay to rest, she know me best. Her words still be playing in my head.
That's Carrie Foe with the title track off her latest album, Real Bitches Don't Die. Carrie, K-A-R-I, Foe, F-A-U-X. She's a popular rapper and musician who has released 3 full-length albums, a couple of EPs, and a bunch of mixtapes. She's collaborated with folks like Childish Gambino. She's appeared on Open Mike Eagle's Anime Trauma Divorce album. And she's been making sense of what she's been through and what she's going through, as we'll get into in our conversation. Carrie Foe, welcome to Depression Mode.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You've been very honest and forthright and vulnerable about mental health issues in your music. You've been very blunt about it. I wonder, how far back does your mental health story go? Does it go back to childhood? How far back are we going?
Yeah, it definitely goes back to childhood. The earliest I could remember is 12 years old. I would say like 11, 12.
What happened then?
I had decided that I wanted to take my own life at a very, very early age. And I was put with a psychiatrist, and that was my first time ever having like a doctor for my mind. I didn't really like my doctor. He was very boring. He was very, I don't know, there wasn't like a connection. There was like, he didn't seem to want to understand what it is that I was feeling. It was just kind of like, this is what's wrong with you. Boom, we should give you medicine. And my mom, I like fought my mom on it. I was like, no, I don't want to take medicine, because even at the age I had like heard or seen that like when you take medicine, like you're not as creative, or you're not like your personality doesn't bloom like it should and all these other things. So she never put me on medication. And so, yeah.
So then what happened if you were untreated?
I am still untreated to this day. Okay. I have these like weird back and forths of like wanting to get to the root of it and figure out what is happening in my mind. But then to be completely honest with you, I'm scared because I'm like, I have this thing in my mind and I know it's wrong, like it's wrong, but I have this thing in my mind that like once somebody tells me that this is the thing, it's now, it's like real. And yeah, I don't know. I've been to therapy a lot. I try to like really self-analyze. I'm very self-aware and I try to just like take my time with my actions, my words, and how I like deal with myself.
When you were a kid then, what happened with that suicidal thoughts?
They come and they go. They just like
still.
Well, not as often, not as much as they used to. I would say like the last time that I felt that way was right before I made Cry for Help. So Cry for Help in 2019 was the EP project that I put out. And maybe like a year and a half before that, or 2 years before that, I had just been kind of struggling of like with feelings of loneliness and like not feeling like I fit in anywhere. I was living in Los Angeles, which really, 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 like that environment had an effect on my mind and like who I was supposed to be and how I was supposed to show up and all these just unrealistic expectations, you know? And then I put out that project and at first I was really scared to do it because I was like, oh, well, I don't want people knowing my business. Like this might be too much. And the response that I got to it was like, oh my God, I feel this way too. And so it really made me feel a lot better. And I just started going to therapy. Like I just started like talking to someone actively about my feelings and, you know, finding ways to kind of like combat those feelings, but also allowing myself to feel how I feel.
So was that the first time you started going to therapy? Was it around 2019?
I would say that was my longest stint of therapy. I was doing therapy for like a year, a little over a year. Before that, I would like get into therapy and then I would like either not have any money to afford it or I would just kind of, you know, fall off with it.
Hmm. Let's go back to when you started with music, because I understand that you were writing poetry before you started rapping.
Mm-hmm.
What would you write poetry about?
Just anything. I think it started when I was in elementary school and it's kind of like a class assignment. You know, you learn about different types of poems like sonnets and haikus and all these different things. And so I just would like when I would do it at school, I'd be like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'm going to do this at home. And I would just kind of write about whatever I was feeling or whatever I was seeing, just kind of practicing those like literary devices.
And then how did that turn into music?
So it turned into music because I would write raps for my friends in elementary school. I would like take a piece of notebook paper and I would write whatever I thought about my friend. I would write it for them and I would give it to them. And I'd be like, okay, like this is your rap, like you rap this. And so it became this thing that like my other friends would be like, oh my God, can you write me a rap too? And I'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. And so it just became this thing. And I used to listen to a lot of rap music because of my older brother. He's 10 years older than me. And he had like an immaculate like CD collection. You remember those CD holders?
Sure.
That was like it was like an encyclopedia of just like 90s rap and R&B. And I would, you know, sneak in his room and just flip through the CD holder and look at the covers and all this other stuff while listening to the music. So that's kind of how I got my first introduction to like gangsta rap. I would say not the stuff that wasn't on the radio.
right. So then when did you start recording yourself?
I was like 15. I would say 2007, 2008. I had friends that were rappers, like that was their thing. And they were like, oh, like y'all should come over. Like me and my friends, like, y'all should come over. We'd be rapping over here. Like we have a setup in the garage, whatever. And we would just go over there and makeup songs. And I remember I was just hanging out one day and my friend, he was a little bit older than us. And he was like, but he had been rapping, like everybody kind of like knew him or whatever. And he was like, you sound like you can rap. You should write, he was like, write a 16 bar verse and come back here tomorrow and record it. And so I was, well, first of all, what's a bar? What's 16 bars? What is that? Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what that meant. And so he showed me how to count bars. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then I went, wrote my rap, came back the next day, recorded it. And my best friend at the time, she wrote a verse too. She got on the second verse. And then we like put it on Facebook. Yeah, and people liked it. So I just kind of went with it.
And then when did you start taking it seriously as like, this is the thing I'm going to do?
It wasn't until... Okay, so this is going to sound strange, but my mind works how it works, right? I would say that I didn't really truly realize that this was my job until about, I would say like 2017, 2018. And by that time I had been doing it for like, I had been like, so I put out, Laugh Now, Die Later in 2014. So that's when I started doing it professionally, right? But I didn't take it. I didn't understand that this was my job well into it. So maybe like 3, 4, 5 years into it, I'm like, oh, this is my job. This is like, I pay taxes like to the government to do like this thing.
Yeah,
I kind of just had my head down and just felt really passionate about making music and being creative. And then I just looked up one day and was like, oh, okay. This is what we're doing. Like, we love this.
And then how does your mental health track along with that? Like, so you start this career, you eventually realize that it is your career. You get noticed, your songs get out into the world. How are you doing as that happens?
It's really tough just because I would say like the environment that I was like thrusted into was one, I was very unfamiliar with what I was walking into with the industry of it all. I think that like industry wise, it's just for me, where I'm from, I'm from like a small city, Little Rock, Arkansas. Everybody pretty much knows everybody, or everybody goes to church together or been to school together or whatever. Right. And there's just kind of this, like when you don't like somebody or you don't fuck with somebody, you stay away from them, or you just like, y'all can coexist, but you don't speak. You don't, you know, you just leave it as what it is. Either you fighting or you just leaving it alone. Mm. And I think that walking into the industry, I've just started to see like people who didn't like each other, like hanging out and like being cool and being friends. And for me, but it was normal. It was like a normal thing. It's like, oh, but I'm going to need that person one day. So like, of course I'm going to be nice to them and be cool with them. But like deep down, I hate them. And I think for that, it just made me feel crazy. It made me feel really, really, really crazy. And so there was just like a lot of relationships that just kind of got severed because I just didn't understand what I was walking into. And so, I mean, I feel like a lot of people that I'm still like really close to and really cool with, they understand me enough to be like, oh, that's just how she is. Like, she don't mean no harm, whatever. But I don't know. I just tell the truth. Like, if I'm not fucking with something, I'm not fucking with it. And you can't really convince me to do anything other than that. And that's really been my saving grace in a lot of situations with like the music industry.
Yeah. I admit I'm still concerned about the suicidal ideation that you bring up, because it doesn't seem to have gone away. Like how,
it has.
Okay. Since 2019.
Yeah. Because I don't live in LA. I said most of the issues were stemming with the environment. I didn't have any family. Mm. I didn't feel like I had like a lot of real friends. And so that felt very isolating. When you feel isolated and you feel like people are pressuring you to do certain things that you don't feel comfortable with doing, that you start to like feel like something's wrong with you because your immediate environment is telling you, hey, you're weird. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do that. You don't want to hang out with these people. You don't want to. It's like the moment I was like, you know what? I'm going to go home because like clearly this isn't the kind of life I want to live. Also, there wasn't a good work-life balance. It's like when you make music and you live in a city that is around industry, everything you do is pretty much for industry. Like the people you hang out with, it's like, oh, well, we work together and we make music together and we do this together and we do that together. But then we also, it's just like there's no separation of like what's my life and what's my career. So the moment that I came home, I decided that I wanted to figure out what I wanted my life to look like instead of chasing what I was told that I should want for myself.
So do you live in Little Rock now?
No, I live in Houston.
You live in Houston. Okay. Because you've moved around a little bit. Have you been looking for something as you've moved around? I know you've lived in Atlanta. I know you've lived in New York and LA. What's been the motivation to move from place to place beyond that experience in LA where you just didn't feel at home at all?
I think I just wanted to just experience something different. I mean, after this, I'm going to go live overseas somewhere. And I'm just going to keep bouncing around because I feel like there's so much world to see and there's so many people to meet, so many different experiences to have. Yeah, I'm 31 years old. I have no children. I have a great partner who wants to travel as well. And I'm just going to do that. It's not necessarily looking for anything. Like, if anything, I've realized that like anything that I'm going to be looking for is already within myself. So I have to like do that deep exploration inside of myself and figure out what it is that I need and what I want.
More with Carrie Foe in just a moment. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best because obviously there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh. We're back with the rapper Carrie Foe. Can you walk us through the adjustments that you made in your personal life, in your professional life over the years that have landed you in a place where it seems like you're doing pretty well? Like what conscious steps have you taken to get to a better place with your mental health?
I think that I really try, and this is like, I feel like this will be a lifelong thing, but I really just try to focus, like not watch other people's lives and like, cause they, like they say, the, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And that's something that I know for a fact. You know, you see other people doing things and you're like, oh man, I should be doing that. But then when you get to the root of it, it's like, actually, I don't want that. Like, I don't want that for myself. And so I think just like being very intentional about the things that I do and knowing that like I'm doing this because this is what I want my life to look like. Also, I think like, I try to breathe. I really try. I just try to like meditate and just breathe and not get too, just rush to a response or rush to like, just really just like taking my time more than anything. I used to like try to rush and like respond to stuff or like on an email, like, oh my God, this person emailed me. I need to email them back immediately. Like just, it's okay. It's okay. If you take a day or two to respond to something, you don't have to stress yourself out about that. Things will come, things will happen the way that they're supposed to. And I have to like believe that.
You've been outspoken about mental health in your work. You allude to mental health in a lot of your music. Why do you feel a need to do that? Are you on a mission to educate people? Are you trying to affect some change in society?
No.
Okay.
I think that what I want people to understand is that the music that I make is my form of therapy. It is my like. I came up with this analogy the other day, is that like, my mind is like the sea, and I'm a like deep sea diver exploring like the things that have affected me that I may not have even understood until this point in my life, that I'm like, oh wait, that thing happened and that was traumatic, and this is why I act like this, or this is why I responded the way that I did. It's just kind of like a form of self-mastery or documentation, and I just put it to a beat. That's really all it is. Like, I'm not an expert. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. The thing that most interests me is like my mind and my experiences and how they've shaped me, and trying to figure out how I can just like grow and change and be better as a person. And I just happen to do it to music. So
how do you go about figuring out how those things have affected you and changed you?
So I feel like I've been in therapy to pick up on some of the things that we talked about. And I mean, it's like, it's ongoing. Family shit is family shit. Life shit is life shit. And it's just like picking up on certain things and being like, hey, like, actually, that's not okay. Like, I mean, to be transparent, like mom, parents is a big role in my life. I was adopted when I was like a baby. That I feel like that has formed some type of like abandonment, whatever issues within me. And then like I have a mom that raised me, but then even then, like there's things that she's been through that she is now projected onto me. And so for a long time, I've like kind of like dealt with that, went through that. And now I'm at a point where I'm like, hey, wait, that's not okay. Like, it's not okay that you talk to me like that. It's not okay that you put your hands on me. It's not okay for whatever. It's not okay. It's just not okay. And so I think that like me, just growing and learning and understanding what I should be accepting of from other people, like starting there, that's like the first person you meet in your life. And now it's just trickling down and being like, okay, these are the type of relationships I want to, like, these are the type of friends I want to have. These are the type of partners I want to have. I want them to respect me in this way. And I have to stand up for myself. I've had a really hard time like standing up for myself initially without it turning into something where I'm lashing out on people, because I've just kind of like been quiet the whole time. But I've learned that in my childhood. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm long-winded. I just be talking. So
that's a good thing. We value that in this particular kind of conversation. If you don't mind, can you tell me a little bit more about what it is that your mom was doing that you had to kind of reckon with later?
My mom is, because I don't like to diagnose people, and I know like people love to throw around the narcissist word, but I think that my mom is the center of her universe. I'll say that. And I think that when you're a parent and you are the center of your universe, you are looking for your children to show up for you, just kind of be a thing for you that you haven't found within yourself because of your experiences. I mean, I don't want to like get into like crazy details, but she's just been somebody that's like, everything is about her. It's her way, the highway. Something good happened in my life. It's now her. It's her success. It's her win. It's her thing to go and tell everybody else about, even if I don't want anybody to know. And it's just kind of like, well, what are you mad about? Like, why are you upset? Can you get over it? Just get over it. It's been however many years. Get over it. And I'm just like, okay, girl, I'm going to get over it over here, like separate from you. And, you know, it sucks because I love my mom and I want to have a relationship with her. But I also want to, like I said, I finally got to a place where I'm like happy and I want to like maintain that. And I've just realized that like a lot of the relationships and spaces that I chose to like be in were not conducive to me being happy. If anything, they like wanted me to not be happy so they could have a reason to like kind of, you know, always dump their shit on me or always feel like, oh, I'm helping her. Like, look at me. I'm keeping her alive. Like, you know, it's just like, it's weird. Like people be having their weird reasons. They need to be needed and that's fine. But I just be wanting to take care of myself.
So how do you take care of yourself in the midst of all that with that trauma and with that history behind you?
Well, right now, I'm not going to lie. It's been very weird to now have this, be in this point in my life where I'm not talking to my mom. But I will say this though, it feels like a newfound freedom. And I'm like not, I don't want to cry.
You can cry.
It feels like a newfound freedom in a way of like now I get to decide who I am instead of being told who I am. And I just feel like a lot of people in my, you know, childhood, like growing up, whatever, like they kind of told me who I was and I believed them. And so it has had, like, I've harbored those feelings and I've held those feelings for a very long time. And I finally got to a point where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stand up to my first bully and tell her that I'm not accepting that anymore. And then, you know, hopefully that just trickles down into every other relationship to where I can stand up for myself. And so it's been hard to accept, but I'm working through it. It's super recent. This has been in the last couple of months that I'm like not, that I'm not like, you know, speaking with her and I'm still processing it and, you know, but I am very, very happy though. I'm very happy with, you know, who I am and where I am. And I don't have any regrets. Like, even if there's relationships that like fell apart because of me or whatever, like I still have no regrets because I can look back and be like, damn, I should have did that differently. So next time a situation like that comes, I'm going to do it differently. So yeah, sorry.
Don't be sorry. You mentioned standing up to your first bully. Was that bully your mom or was that somebody else?
It was my mom.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It was.
You told her how you felt.
I've told her how I felt my entire life, and I've told her how I felt my
didn't always get through.
Oh, it never got through. I'm 31 years old, and it's still like, huh? What did I do? I don't understand. I'm like, girl, I've explained this to you for a very long time, and it seems like you don't want to understand. I feel like if you wanted to, you would be having continuous conversation and be like, okay, so like, what did I do that made you feel that? It's just like, damn, you still mad about this? It's just like, girl, I'm traumatized. Yes, I'm still mad about it. Like, shit.
Well, it sounds like you're being kind to yourself in a way that people haven't been kind to you in the past. And so you're finally getting that kindness and that love that that you got ripped off on earlier in life.
Yeah, but it's so weird in my brain is like, oh my God, like this is what it feels like to not be like fighting metaphorically, like fighting for your life. I mean, and literally like fighting for your life. Like for the first time, I'm like, wow, like my home is my sanctuary. It's like, we have jazz playing all day. We got candles burning. We drinking tea. We just relaxing. It's just like, for the first time, like I don't feel like I'm trying to like survive or like trying to defend myself from someone or something. And so I like had read about this thing that said, like, you know, when you get into a space, like when your brain feels like it's in a safe space, it starts to bring up all the trauma that you've experienced that you might not have time to like kind of sort out. And so that's where I'm at, where I'm like, oh my God, like I've been living like this. I've been allowing y'all to talk to me like this. I've been acting like that. Oh my God. Like, I can't believe what. And so, it's like a good space to be in. It feels a little scary because it's unknown, but I'm excited because it's a clean slate and I get to just like really start living for me and getting to know who I am outside of, you know, who I've been to other people. I feel like a lot of times people's relation to you and who you've been to them for so long can kind of keep you in a certain place because they're like, well, you always did this and you always acted like that. So it's like, damn, stop reminding me. I want to be somebody else today. Can I be somebody else? Can I grow up? Can I not be a child anymore?
I would think too, in the business that you're in the professional world that you're in, that can be a challenge too, not being judged on appearance or judged on, you know, the commodification of what you make or downloads or whatever it is. Like it seems like it could get really impersonal and kind of brutal in a hurry, given that line of work that you're in.
Oh yeah, I think so. But I also, in the beginning, I was impressionable. Like, you could tell me anything. I mean, I'm from Arkansas. There's no industry. There's no entertainment industry in Arkansas. And so that was like my first time being outside of the South. I mean, Atlanta's a bigger city than Little Rock, but I would still think, to me, they're closer. They're closer in like, I guess, kind of like values and how you treat people or whatever. Now going to like LA, it was just, and being in the industry of LA, it was a whole different thing. It was like any little thing I did was kind of like picked apart. It was like, why you talk like that? Like, why you dress like that? Why you listen to that type of music? Why do you da da da? Like, it was everything. I'm like, how do I fit in here? Then I started like trying to do things to fit in. And I'm like, I'm so unhappy. This is so whack. Like, I don't even like y'all. Y'all aren't even that interesting. Like, y'all aren't even that interesting enough for me to like change who I am fundamentally. This is whack. And then COVID happened. And I was like, I'm going. I had already, it's funny because in 2019, I had already had thoughts of like going home. I was like, man, I've been here for 5 years and I've hated every minute of it. Like living here, like working there, cool. Living there, different story for me. And I was just like, 2019, I was like, man, I should go home. Like, I feel like I should want to move home. And then COVID happened, then that March, I was like, I'm going home. I was like, you know what? This is my sign that I'm just going to go and be closer to family and just like get regrounded in who I am and what it is that I love. And then we'll go from there. And yeah, it's kind of how I ended up in Houston.
How did that work out then? Going, you went back to Little Rock for COVID?
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
I mean, it was fine at first, but then of course you start to feel kind of like kind of claustrophobic with living with family. And like, don't get me wrong, like I love my family and my mom is like, it is what it is, you know, like it's more of like an internal, like this thing that we go back and forth with. But I can deal with her. It's just like, she just be irritating me sometimes, like on a deep, deep level. So it was fine at first. And then I was like, all right, I got to get out of here. Like I'm grown. I can't live here. I didn't want to be in Little Rock because I felt like if they had like an airport that kind of flew everywhere, I would probably have been there. Cause I do like being close to my dad and my grandma and people like that. But I was like, I need to find somewhere that has like an airport that kind of like flies all over the country and just more things happening. And so I came down and visited one of my high school best friends. She had been living in Houston since we graduated and she loved it. And so I came and visited and I was like, oh my God, I love it here. Like, it's so cool. It's Southern. It's like, it feels like home, but there's more happening. So I was like, all right, cool. And then I just moved here and been here this whole time. Since 2021, yeah.
More of my conversation with Carrie Foe after the break. Back with rapper Carrie Foe. What's your plan for the future in terms of taking care of your mental health and more your mental well-being and you know, having come to terms with some of this trauma and some of these rough things that have happened to you, what's your plan going forward?
I'm not going to lie. I do want to see a psychiatrist again. Well, first of all, at 12, I just don't think I understood. I don't feel like I had the right psychiatrist. And two, I just feel like I didn't understand what was going on, really. I just knew that I didn't want somebody to tell me something was wrong with me. When, you know, there's nothing wrong with, like, being medicated or any of that. There's nothing wrong with it. And so I've, like, now come back to it, which I have a close friend. She's been diagnosed bipolar, and we have had multiple conversations about it. And so she takes medication. And, you know, she's just like, you know, do like, you know, go see a psychiatrist, talk with them and stuff and really see what's best for you. Like, that's your decision to make. And I think for me, more than anything else, I just want to know, like, what's happening with me. So one, I can understand myself better and know what are the things that I really need to be doing actively to keep me in this good space. And to also, like, let my loved ones know, like, hey, These are the things that's happening with me, guys. Like, even though you guys are already like super gracious with me and giving me so much grace, this is what's actually happening. Yeah, because I don't know. I think that I really do need, I need help in a way where I want somebody to be able to give me the real tools. One, I need to know what's happening, and then I need the tools. Because like you said, I'm not gonna lie, I did kind of get offended when you were like, well, the suicide ideation didn't go away. And I'm like, they have, but I understand what you meant by like if you had that and it's still there because it's untreated.
That was my concern.
Yeah. But I'm not I really, really, really do. I fight tooth and nail to like not put myself in situations that will have me feeling that way. Seriously, I've worked really, really hard, and I feel like a lot of it stemmed from like, I feel like when I was a kid, that was just like family life stuff. And then again, when I was living in LA, it was like environment. And I feel like now that I'm in this environment, it's like safe enough for me to like really understand what's happening with me. And I have like my boyfriend and my dog who love me, and they'll like support me and, you know, on that journey. So.
What's keeping you from going to a psychiatrist?
Like I said, it's going to be real. It's going to be real. I know that sounds so silly to say, because it's like, well, Carrie, it's real regardless if you know or not. it's real whether you know it or not. And this, I know that sounds so.
It's happening.
I know it sounds so silly. It sounds so silly. But it's just
it's not silly.
But like, I don't know, just my family's super religious. And so, yes. So it's like the stigma of like therapy and taking medicine for your mind and all these different, I don't know. I have to get over what I've been taught and what I've been told and really do this for myself, because yeah, I don't know. I want to stay in this good place.
Yeah. What do you think? And what do you think you would say to a psychiatrist?
I would say that I have trouble focusing. I've realized it's so crazy. Oh my God, let me tell you this. I have the craziest time focusing, and I did not realize it until like last week. So I was like cleaning out my hard drive, right? And I like stumbled upon something that like I wasn't even looking for. I was not looking for this shit at all. I'm reading this document or whatever, and I'm like, oh my God, like, So then I start like, I sit down and I just like start doing like the craziest math. I'm like going through all these things, and I'm like doing math to like put like basically get a spreadsheet together, right? So I go and I put together a spreadsheet, and it wasn't like I was supposed to be looking for something totally different, and I didn't find the thing that I was actually looking for until 2 days later, because I had got hyper fixated on doing this spreadsheet. So I don't know what you would diagnose that, but it sounds like ADHD.
There's some echoes.
And then honestly, I think, I don't know. Okay, so don't get mad at me. Nobody, please get mad at me. But I think I'd be having manic depressive episodes for sure. For sure. For sure. So I think.
What do those look like?
Manic is I can do anything. I can achieve anything. I'm a genius. Like I am Walt Disney. I am. I don't know if you got that, but that's a Kanye West joke. But okay. And then depressive is like, oh, we're like bed rotting for like days at a time. It used to be really, 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 really bad when I was living in LA. Like I would sleep so much and wake up and be tired and just go back to sleep. Like I was basically just trying to like, I'm sleeping through the days. Like, okay, can we just hurry this up? Like whenever the good part comes, like I'm gonna just sleep through it. And now I've gotten better about it. Like if I feel myself being like, oh, like I just want to lay down. I don't really want to do anything. I'll at least like, I've been trying to like stretch and like at least walk. Like I got my dog. So I walk him to the park and stuff. And I try to like, you know, just keep myself when I'm having those moments, like still be moving and still be doing things and just not on a, you know, not overexerting myself.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like there's a good mental place that you're in that you want to preserve, that you've really fucking earned, that you've worked like hell to get to. And that's really wonderful to hear. But there's a sort of intellectual good place that you've gotten to as well. Because like you know, you're in a city you love, you're with a person and a dog who you love, and you've come to this understanding of maybe some of the things that have tripped you up over the years. And so it's really an accomplishment, and I hope that you have some pride in what you've been able to accomplish here.
Yeah, I mean, I do. But that's why I'm like, oh man, like I can't let nobody.
I gotta lock this down.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't let, like, I'm sorry. Like, if you make me feel, oh no, you gotta go. Like I could love you from over there, but I can't, like, I worked so hard and I don't want to take this for granted, because this is not how it's always been. And so, yeah, I just, oh man. Thank you. Also, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Oh, sure.
Those are very kind words.
Are you making music right now?
Yeah, I am. It's like kind of on and off. Like, I'm one of those people where when the thing hits me, like when the album idea like strikes me, I'm like in the studio every day working on the music, making it. But in between, I'm just kind of like living life and hanging out and I write, I journal a lot and stuff. And so a lot of the concepts for the songs kind of come from journaling. And so, yeah, right now I'm kind of just writing, feeling how I feel. I've made a couple demos that are really good. And they kind of, I mean, they're kind of addressing the things that we talked about today. And yeah, like I said, I'm not trying to tell the world how to live their life. I'm just documenting it. And if you like it, thank you.
Just notes on your journey that you're taking.
Yeah, just notes.
Carrie Foe, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your vulnerability. And I think your words are going to help people.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can hear Carrie Foe's music wherever you get your music. The internet, for instance. It's all over the internet. Our show exists because of the donations of our listeners, people who want this show to keep going so that they can get something out of it, so that other people can get something out of it. Do something nice for yourself and for others and donate to the show. If you already have, thank you. We appreciate it. If not, it's easy to do. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you. You figure that one out yourself and then select Depression Mode from the list of shows. Be sure to hit subscribe, give us 5 stars, write rave reviews. All that helps get the show out into the world where it can help folks. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline can be reached in the U.S. and Canada by calling or texting 988. It's free. It's available 24/7. Our Instagram and Twitter are both at DepreshPod. Our Depression Mode newsletter is on Substack. I write that every week. Search that up. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at John Moe. Be sure to join our Preshies group on Facebook. A lot of great discussion happening over there about mental health, people supporting each other, people sharing information. It is a supportive community. Just search up Preshies on Facebook. Our electric mail address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. Hi, credits listeners. You can sing the lyrics to Amazing Grace to the tune of Gilligan's Island, and vice versa. You can also swap in the Emily Dickinson poem Because I Could Not Stop for Death for either one, in either song. Enjoy. You can make a whole afternoon of it. Depression Mode is made possible by your contributions. Our production team includes Raghu Manavalan, Kevin Ferguson, and me. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings. Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papuchik. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out. Building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason. Maybe there's no reason. I just keep believing. No one knows the answer. Maybe there's no answer. I just keep on dancing.
This is DB in Boulder, Colorado. Take a deep breath with me.
Building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out.
You can do it.
Building wings, building wings, building wings.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.